Thank you for joining Let's Talk Black Politics. My name is Chelsea Wadigo. I'm a Mananjali and South Sound woman, and I wish to acknowledge, on behalf of our panel today, the traditional custodians of the land in which we're all on. I want to introduce my co-host, Dr. David Singh.
I'm pleased to be here again, Chelsea. For those who don't know me, I'm a settler. I describe myself as an activist scholar, I guess, although I'm not entirely convinced by that description. It's also worth mentioning that I'm a settler by virtue of violence, both originary and continuing, and that bears repeating every time we describe ourselves as settlers.
Hey, now this week's show, Black Politics, has taken a bit of a turn because of a turn of events last week. I don't know, from that so-called alleged comedian, Isaac Butterfield,
Butterfield, yeah.
who pulled out a 1 minute segment of his show about jokes about Aboriginal people, Aboriginal women. I think most mob would have seen it. We're not going to replay the jokes that he told. I think we've heard enough. I mean, I heard those jokes when I was like in high school, so nothing new. But we are going to have a talk about old mate's little segment and his subsequent response. And look, we bring in the big guns for these kind of conversations, comedy experts, and none other than my favorite comedian, Amar Rahman. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I wish we were meeting under better circumstances.
Now, for our listeners, that you've been on Wild Black Women before. For our listeners, I mean, I always describe you as the punch a Nazi guy, but can
I'm
you
happy to be known as that. Honestly, that's better than having a name to me.
it's a tie between punch a Nazi guy and the reverse racism guy. Yeah, because again,
Classics.
iconic. That's how you do comedy, Isaac. That's going viral. But yeah, sorry, muck around. Can you please introduce yourself to our listeners? Who you are, where you come from?
My name is Amar Rahman, also a settler. I have been doing comedy on and off now for 15 years. Grew up between Australia and the Middle East, and then left Australia 5 years ago and haven't
Wonder
been back.
why. Well, sorry to bring you back today.
Oh, sorry. It's there's no other reason I'd be back other than to discuss some horrible incident of racism.
Oh dear. Now, I don't know where we start with this fella. Look, for context for those who saw it, he on his Instagram page, he shared one of his clips from a show, 1 minute of just jokes about Aboriginal people. And it started off with, "It's so easy to write Aboriginal jokes, and let me show you." They write themselves and then went untold and told that the jokes, honestly, that as black fellas, we've heard them before. Like, they've written themselves because since 1788, they've been telling these jokes. Like, it's not that clever. And there was a response, you know, mob called it out online, and Isaac declared both went viral and got cancelled at the same time, I guess. That's how he's sort of framing it. And then he did a response to the haters, and I've got some clips to play out that we're going to kind of deconstruct, analyze, if you will, the logic of Isaac Butterfield, if that could be found.
Deconstruct, yeah.
We'll try.
Do our
How
best.
many PhDs does it take?
I mean, where do we start? How do you fellas feel when you've seen that nonsense?
Oh, look, I mean, if this guy has any logic, I mean, frankly, it would defy a time lord. There you go. There's some comedy for you. I mean, it's just, I've heard variations of these jokes growing up in the UK. And they have real world consequences, right? So every time families gathered around to watch It Ain't Half Hot Mum, or what was the other one with Alf Garnett, right? Just spewing this racist filth, and we were told to laugh at them and not with them. Well, certainly the next day in the schoolyard, people were laughing at me and doing a lot more than laughing.
Hey.
So stereotypes can cause physical harm. You know, there's the you know they don't disappear into the ether. There is a consequence.
Yeah, I mean, the joke about the sort of criminalization, attaching criminality to Indigenous people. I mean, Uncle hasn't had to work on coronial inquiries of missing or murdered Indigenous women in which criminality has been attached to justify a lack of police investigation into their deaths. He hasn't had to deal with the fact of the reality of hyper-incarceration of Aboriginal men, women, and children. So I guess it's funny for him because it doesn't affect him
No.
whatsoever. and can't see the connection between what he says and the reality of the world that we occupy. Absolutely. That makes that rational, not just funny, but rational.
Well, you know, I mentioned before we started that, like, I hadn't really thought about this guy since Christchurch. You know, the last time I remember him going viral was after that horrible, and in exactly the same way, you know, like, what's the premise of the joke is, the premise is, what's the worst thing I can say? Which is not the premise of a joke. That's the premise of, like, how to just upset people, you know? And this guy's playing this game where at the same time, his show, I think, is called something like Cancel Me or something like that. The premise is, what's the worst thing I can say? He uploads a video himself. And then when he gets the response that he's intentionally provoking, then he's like, oh, this isn't me. You guys don't understand. What happens in a comedy club is different to what happens in real life. It's like, well, which one do you want? Okay, you want to be edgy by your standards or by anyone's standards, then, you know, stand by what you've said.
Yeah.
Don't back out, right? It's really like artistic cowardice to do something and pretend to be pushing, you know, some kind of boundary or being transgressive in some way. And then when you get any kind of pushback to say, hey, you know, don't make me the victim. You know, I have no hate for anyone. But, you know, this whole conversation about specifically about comedy and power and the power of speech, this has been happening for 10 years now. Like, everyone knows it. Everyone understands it. So we're at a point now where if you're an adult, you either care or you don't care.
And there's always this line that certain comedians roll out that it's like to critique it or to raise concerns, but it's like an attack against the art form of comedy or something. Like, I just don't know any other profession in which you can just do as you like without any critique.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, this is just like a myth that comedians invented, right? That this is like a sacred art form. This is the last bastion, free speech. But why? Why? Like, compared to what? Film, like, literature, theater, like, why? Like, what makes you special, right? And, like, I honestly think, having been in the industry and in the art form, like, there is something about stand-up comedy that really breeds a type of narcissism in people where, like, you're alone on a stage with a microphone. No one's allowed to talk back to you, and people just applaud your ideas. And I think in people's minds, it's like, yeah, this is like, I'm a truth teller, or I'm a modern day philosopher. It's like, no, like, most of us are here because we failed at other jobs. Okay, it's fine. It's fine. But yeah, there is like this intentional kind of mythology around stand-up comedy that's kind of wielded when it comes time to discuss free speech. It's like, oh, if you don't let stand-up comedians say do whatever they want, then, like, society's over. Then we're living in, you know, that's the canary in a gold mine. You know, if someone comes back at a stand-up comedian, then free speech is dead. And it's really, like I said, it's cowardice at the end of the day.
As an academic who's supposed to enjoy academic freedom, I want that kind of freedom that comedians get, because I don't even
enjoy.
I'm not even defended, but I'm protected by my institution when it comes to that, which is, you know, agreed upon kind of arrangements. I need to get into comedy.
Time to pick up the microphone. Time to pick up the microphone.
You know, career change. It's on the cards.
I remember the cultural theorist Stuart Hall in 1979 put out a program called It Ain't a Half Racist, Mum, where he deconstructed British comedy. And he had this to say about stereotypes. I quote, stereotypes do affect people's lives. The trouble is you can laugh at a joke and accept the stereotype at the same time. Jokes can strengthen our prejudices even while we're laughing at them. So in a way, this kind of comedy naturalizes racism in a way that's perfectly acceptable.
Absolutely. I mean, people, you know, again, this idea of it's just a joke, you know, is, first of all, we've all heard that. Anyone who's been a victim of racism or any kind of targeting knows that the first line is, it's just a joke, right? So it's your problem, basically. Harden up, like, you're the one who can't take it. But, and we also know that, you know, it's just a joke is actually the precursor to violence, like you said. You know, it's even in the schoolyard.
Enough about Stuart Hall. Let us go to the philosophizing of Isaac Butterfield.
A real intellectual. Giant.
Sorry, David, but, you know.
What I think a lot of people missed is we're not laughing at Aboriginal people here. We're laughing about how f***ed up the joke is itself. That is what is funny about it. It's, you sit there and you see this dude on stage and he says the most outrageous thing ever and you laugh because it's horrifying. If people sat there and they agreed with that and they're like, yeah, that's true, then that's f***ed up. That's racist. But I don't think a comedian on stage telling a joke about a racial stereotype is inherently racist. What matters here is an intent. Did I intend to hurt people and harm a group of people because I don't like them? No. That is insane. Madness.
Madness. Madness, I tell you.
Political correct has gone mad. Do you think that what I said had an effect? It's crazy.
I love how he says telling a racist joke isn't racist. Then what the hell is?
Right.
He and this one, he went intentions.
Yeah.
It's 2023. Are we really buying intentions as a necessary ingredient to racial violence?
His audience is. Right? I mean, that's really their what they think is like a get out of jail free card. Right. That, you know, if I didn't mean to hurt anyone, so if you're hurt, I'm sorry. Like if you're the worst kind of apology. If it offended you, sorry.
He is winning the racist bingo game at the moment because he also invoked an Aboriginal best friend in this 15-minute monologue that he offered.
And he had someone on his podcast last week and we spoke about racism. And I just thought, so then you still did this? Like,
Yeah.
Even worse than I thought. Like, you claimed that you had a conversation about racism towards First Nations people a week ago on your podcast. And you're still sitting here, like you said, ticking the racist bingo card. And, you know, the other thing is just look online at the people who are defending him. Like the amount of racism that is unleashed by the people who are saying it's just a joke, right?
One of the things I liked about your thread was the calling out, where are the comedians in this country calling it out? I haven't been following it a lot because it just made me wild, but has there been anyone else calling it out amongst your fraternity?
Look, I got exiled from like fraternity a long time ago for saying this too much. So I haven't gone back and checked, but I just remember, you know, at the height of BLM, suddenly all the comedians that, you know, sort of my generation of white comedians were posting black squares, and they were posting that clip of Nikia Louie and Miranda Tattersall on Get Cracking, that segment, which was incredible. The segment was incredible. But it just became this sort of very quick thing that everyone was doing. And I know these people because I've been in the same industry with them for 15 years. And I know, like, haven't worked with anyone who's not white, haven't collaborated with anyone who's not white. You know, it's just not part of, you know, anything that they've done. Here's my get out of jail free card, post the black square, post this clip. And everything's back to normal. And I'm just thinking, where are those people? Where are you all? Yeah. Nowhere.
Silence is deafening. Yeah, right? Deafening.
I think that, you know, the other side of it is that they're not only terrified to say something, but I'm sure there's chunks of their audience that would also react saying it's just a joke. Mm. So it's not as simple as, oh, this is something terrible. They would have to actively then kind of confront segments of their audience, and I just think they're just not interested.
And there is, and because they know there's a market for this, and this is the thing that made me wild about him claiming that he's being cancelled with racist jokes. Even a few years back when Dave Chappelle came to Australia, I was excited. This is before he turned into who he is.
Dave Chappelle 2.0.
Yes. I lined up to get tickets to get like front row because this was Dave Chappelle racism connoisseur kind of, you know, stuff. So I was like, are you going to come here and tell those jokes? And I remember Angelina talking about when Chris Rock came to Australia previously and doing all like calling out Australia for being racist, and she was like, it was the best show, like he just told the truth about race, and you know, we don't experience that here with comedians here.
Yeah.
Anyway, but so when Dave came here, he didn't do any race stuff, no race material, and he actually did sort of like just some really like superficial Aussie
lukewarm
joke, you know, he performed for a white audience. he knew coming here who his audience was and did nothing on race.
Yeah.
He even did a didgeridoo joke. And I remember walking out and someone was making the noise on the way out. And I was just like, felt so let down by Mr. Race Connoisseur that he knew that that wouldn't hit with an Australian audience. So, of course, the white fellas have been doing it here, whose career is based here. Yeah,
of course. And you know, the thing that I was thinking about is even though in the States and the UK, you definitely have racist comedy, I don't think you could do something like this. I just don't think you could get away with something on this level. Australia is the last outpost, you know? It really, people just really don't understand when I go to overseas and explain that going to Australia is like stepping back in time. Like there's things culturally that will happen in Australia that just won't happen in other Western countries.
I mean, even the Christchurch joke, quotation marks, I mean, just the vileness of that, particularly when the perpetrator was a white Australian.
Yeah.
And then here you have a white Australian male joking about that violence.
Yeah, and it was exactly the same. He made a response video after that as well, saying, you know, of course I'm not making fun of, you know, people dying. The whole premise is to say the darkest thing imaginable. It's like, buddy, do spoken word or like you're missing the fact there's no funny element to this unless your audience is willing to dehumanize the people that you're talking about. Like that's what actually elicits the laughter. Okay. It's not you like being clever. It's not, you know, anything like that. You can only not react in horror or shock. Yeah. Unless you really think less of, you know, the people being mentioned.
Well, this is another his justification. So I can just play this short clip.
Like I'm not one of these comedians who goes out there and tries to make points about climate change and all that. People know that. That's why they come and see me. They come and see me because they know that I'm going to push the boundaries and talk absolute horrible shit about different people, not just Aboriginal people, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. It is everyone. Right? Men, women, different genders, sexualities, everything. You have to attack everything. If you attack one group, if I made a show all about Aboriginal people, then yeah, I'd be a piece of shit. But that's not what I did at all.
So he used a line that I remember Mike's husband was a police officer and what the police officers used to say about the racial violence they perpetrated and that they're not racist against Aboriginal people because they treat everyone like that.
We're violent across the board.
Yeah.
Equal opportunity violence, apparently. Yeah. The equity. I mean, we've got to admire the commitment to equality.
The high standards these men hold themselves to.
I mean, let's not talk about climate justice. Let's not talk about those big issues, but equity is, Also,
I mean, like you said, it's the bingo card. You know, it's not. I do it to everyone. I hate everyone. You know, it's just really, really childish. And you can see clearly like who his like comedy kind of inspirations are. You know, it's Jimmy Carr, Jim Jeffries, Ricky Gervais. You know, unfortunately, like all people that I'm not a fan of, but I never thought I'd say this, like better comedians than him. Like there is actually a scale of, you know, of this style of kind of quote unquote, you know, offensive comedy. And yeah, like I said, it was the same thing after Christchurch. Like he really thinks, not just him. Like there's a sort of an idea in comedy amongst comedians and audiences that somehow, you know, we're living in a time when people are too offended. You can't say anything, and so they say the thing that you're apparently not allowed to say, and they get clicks and likes, and they sell tickets, and they get attention. And at the same time, they say, "Oh, but I can't say it." It's so, you know, it's so cynical. It's really, you know, and so much of this is now marketing for comedians, right? Like, "Oh, I'm getting canceled," is actually, "Oh, you know, I'm selling out tickets because people want to come and hear, you know, comedy from the '80s, basically."
Well, this is the funny part, and this is the part that gets me when he sort of finishes up on this point.
Mate, we go out there on stage and we try to make people laugh, and sometimes we say horrible things to make people laugh, and people laugh at horrible things all the time. We laugh about cancer, we laugh about the Holocaust, and I know a lot of people sitting there probably watching this going, no one laughs about that. Mate, they do. You just saw it then. I travelled all around the country doing those jokes and people laughed every single time. I didn't have one complaint.
I did not have one complaint.
My racist audience didn't complain once. I mean, what's the sample size, Isaac?
What?
What's the methodology, Professor Butterfield? How are we coming to this conclusion? There was no complaints.
Only a white man, though, can claim to be cancelled three times,
right?
I mean, by definition, clearly you haven't.
I know it's dark in those auditoriums, but has he not worked out who his audience is and why he's not getting the complaints?
He claims that the audience is diverse. In his monologue, he says the audience is diverse. I'm sorry, when I saw those people laughing in those front row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who were they, right? They were all white.
I didn't see any of my cousins there.
Yeah.
And what's clear is the response has come a lot from mob. And on his little YouTube thing, he's got a following, right? I mean, because he hasn't been cancelled. He actually posts the critique, particularly from Indigenous peoples, and put up their profiles and their handles to...
Oh, because he says they were threats.
Is yes, that... to show how violent the natives are, basically.
Oh, yeah.
And also to summons his followers to have a go at them. As someone I get, those people who, send their followers to come for me all the time. He knows what he was doing in that response video in trying to humiliate and make Aboriginal people even more of a target than he already has.
Yeah. It's I keep coming back to this idea of cowardice. It's comedy is the most cowardly form of propaganda, but it's the most effective. Right? The other myth that comedians tell each other or themselves is that comedy is inherently subversive. Again, why? Like, it's art, and the majority of art is not subversive. Actually, the majority of art just kind of reflects the status quo, and it's the same thing with comedy.
Yeah.
And comedy is used to launder really, really horrible ideas.
Yep. Mm. I don't know, even when we talk about, blackfellow humour within our community, we laugh at things that we shouldn't laugh at, but it's in a different kind of relationship in terms of how we make sense of, situations that confound us, all that kind of stuff, to survive. But also sometimes there's funny things happen in the midst of, stuff that's going on. But this is different. And I don't understand how people cannot know the difference between punching up and punching down. Like old mate says, I attack everybody, but we're not all at the same level playing field that he imagines for that to then work.
In the real world, not everyone is equally attacked, right? Not everyone's existence is consistently under attack, in the same way. And he just, I don't know whether he realizes it or not, but, there's a lineage in comedy of, humiliating and, controlling non-white people through things like blackface, which has a history in Australia that people just kind of don't want to talk about. And it just shapeshifts, every few decades. And this is the new version of it, edgy or, boundary pushing comedy is basically recycling the same dehumanizing ideas. And like you said, when it's First Nations people as a group discussing things, first of all, the people's humanity is not discarded, right? There's a group of people who, understand what it's like to live like that. And even then, it wouldn't be those jokes, right? It wouldn't be so crude and just, completely dehumanizing. No one speaks about themselves in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's a group of basically rooms full of settlers basically laughing at how people are basically subhuman, it's a completely different thing. But how many more times can you explain this? How many more times can you retread this thing of power and speech. It's at the end of the day, you know, people make a choice. All artists make a choice. And, you know, this guy's part of, you know, now a tradition of people who are like, yeah, I can actually make money doing this and I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Makes you wild. I just find it interesting that, you know, and I've had some issues with comedians of colour, both local and global, about their use of racial slurs and playing with race, who then sort of say, well, it's hump, and, you know, I didn't mean it and it was just a joke. I just don't understand how people can play with race as a joke and then claim to not be involved in the politics.
You know,
it's just such an irresponsible and such an unintelligent claim to make, to go, well, I don't do political humour. It's just about, but it's about race. Like, it's that you can just play around with it. Like it's nothing. Like it's not life and death.
Stuart Hall anticipated, he described it as a method, right? You utter vicious racist jokes, followed by tentative denials, knowing full well which made the stronger impact upon the audience at the time. And he said that it's a method. There's a recipe to this kind of comedy.
I mean, David, you would know that the situation with David Baddiel.
Yes, in the UK, right? Yeah.
And who, you know, he basically did blackface, mocking, his name is
Jason Lee,
the footballer.
Yeah.
And 25 years later, he's kind of been forced to apologize now because he's put out a book about anti-Semitism himself. But, you know, that kind of racist mockery of people of color, like you said, it's not an accident. It's actually a technique. It's actually a form of control.
Absolutely. And the consequences for Jason were enormous. It destroyed his career. His mental health broke down and he's never fully recovered. And so for David to sit down and attempt to apologize, he just compounded the original sin, right? And Jason was not buying it. Even after 25 years, he did not buy it. And there was a recipe. David Baddiel blacked up, put on some dreads. And I was young at the time, and even my household were really shocked. How could this happen? And the BBC, again, the BBC has often been a vehicle for this kind of nonsense, right? This idea that the BBC is woke, oh, goodness me. It's often peddled stereotypes that have done enormous damage to the communities I've come from.
Chelsea, you remember that Hey Hey It's Saturday incident with there was a variety show, David, that used to be on Saturdays here, and they had like a contest segment, like a talent show segment, and there was a group of men, white men, who blacked up as the Jackson 5, basically, and it was only Harry Connick Jr., a white musician from America, who was so shocked that on the show, he said, like, this is like, you know, he just couldn't believe what he was seeing.
Yeah. And the only... Like, what year was that? That'd be in the 80s, wasn't it? Early 90s? The 80s?
No, that was 2000s. Or late
2000s,
late
90s. Was it?
Yeah.
I think I was here at the time, right? Yes, I was. I saw it.
It would have been early 2000s because Hey Hey, it's been gone for...
Yeah. It was after Hey Hey came back.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But it made a comeback. It came back with blackface.
Yes. The only apology that was made on the show was to Harry Connick Jr.
Yes.
To the white American being like, sorry, Harry, we didn't mean to offend you.
You know, and it's funny, like having in my former job teaching Indigenous studies to largely international students who would come to our university to study, and they'd come and do a semester with us and then have to write weekly journal reflections about the content and what they're observing and stuff. And every semester I would have students in tears, horrified by their racist Australian housemates that they had to share with and the things that they were saying, because apparently when Aboriginal people aren't in the room, they say really horrific things about black people.
Who would have suspected such a
I know, I was as shocked as they were. And so I find myself every semester counselling some poor young white American student grappling with the level of racism here. And it was the overtness, how explicit, how freely people spoke about blackfellas here and warning the international guests about the natives. I'm like, this is their experience here. And I think people have no idea how bad this, like people who live here have no idea how bad this is compared to the rest of the world. It's I guess kind of funny.
it's surreal. It really is.
Absolutely.
It's surreal.
I mean, absolutely. When I first came here and I saw that kind of humor, you're absolutely right. I mean, the UK is bad, but nowhere near as bad as what I discovered here. And I went, where am I? You know, I'm not in Kansas anymore. It's that I had to get my bearings and I realized, oh man, this place is laced with wall-to-wall violence, wall-to-wall racial violence. And it's peddled on popular TV. And those kind of popular demotic forms of racism are in everyday circulation. You only have to scratch this veneer of civility, and there it is.
Yeah, and it hasn't, there's been no change or progress. Like those jokes old mate told had a very Kingswood Country vibe, you know? Like there hasn't, it's the same stuff. There's nothing new about it, edgy. It's just the same old.
For me, it was unreconstructed 70s humor, right? It's just like, you know, it's like I'd gone back in time. Absolutely.
But, you know, the thing is that now, you know, with social media, these people can basically build, and that's exactly what they're doing. They build like their own audience that exists completely in a bubble, and they're able to monetize it, you know, and they know that now the algorithm really serves their type of content, right? If you upload a 1 hour discussion of us being like, well, that wasn't very funny compared to his 1 minute of being very racist, the algorithm will definitely favor one over the other. And so it's kind of now this kind of new world of like, they really can do whatever they want as much as they cry about how, you know, they're being attacked or restricted or this and that. Like they're actually living now in a time where this kind of behavior is rewarded literally financially more than it was before.
Yeah, it's, I mean,
15 years ago, even in Australia, you know, it would be hard for him to get on television with that content.
Yeah.
But now he can tour nationally.
Yeah.
Because social media gives you a direct line of communication to people who want to sit in a room and laugh at that stuff.
Yeah. He got what he wanted. He, you know, boasting about going viral. He posted that in order to get that response. And, you know, I did think about whether or not to even engage in a conversation about it in terms of, you know, feeding into that. However, I do think that we have a right reply to this nonsense, and not just to, for me, it's not about just cancelling someone, but calling out how ridiculous his whole premise is. And because the thing is, I mean, we did the show really for Mob, who had to listen to this repeatedly, who felt that, who it took them back to certain places where they've heard those exact things, where they've been in the room or their neighbour has said it, and really to have this yarn for Mob about, you know, making sense of this nonsense, if that's even possible. The purpose of having this yarn was not to give him more attention necessarily, but to speak to the context in which this is situated, which is a violent one and continues to be so for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in this country every day. And it's not funny.
I mean, you know, I guess the other side of trying to make light of these things is exactly that, is to pretend that we live in a time now where there is no violence. And that's the only way to justify saying these things, is that, you know, as usual, you know, colonialism is a thing of the past. It's done. It's something that's finished. And now, you know, we're all in this imaginary level playing field.
Bless. And I've got to find out whose cousin that is that's playing the Aboriginal best friend on this too. But that's another episode. I'm pulling COAs on that one. I want to thank you so much for joining us today for this yarn, and on such quick notice for us. Yeah. We can't wait to see you back in the country, though, at some point, please.
It's going to happen at some point. there's definitely, there's things to talk about, isn't there?
Yes.
So many things. The song we're going to go out on for this week is from Brother Fred Leone, Impossible Odds, Laugh It Off. And it's a song about, well, the reality of what black fellas have to laugh off on any given day.
No more whispering in our mind.
Let's talk Monday to Friday at 9 a.m. on AAA Murray Country, the National Indigenous Radio Service and iHeartRadio. You can catch up on AAA.org.au. Proudly supported by the Community Broadcast Foundation.
A bit about me, Fred Leone, nowadays known as Rival MC. Back in the day, growing up, I got teased just because. Could never put a finger on just what it was, till I was told one day it was because of my skin. I mean, you're right, but those others, they're lazy, smelly and whinge. I cringe, thinking I should knock this fella's block off. Kept my composure and just decided to laugh it off. Hypothetically, if I hit him, man, what would it prove? I'd be arrested in a watch house with no lace in my shoes, kicking myself because he's walking free and I'm in a cell, telling the story to my grandkids, still angry as hell. Well, the message of the story, I guess it's loud and clear. It hurts to be treated as a second-class citizen up in here. So treat people as you would want them to treat you. And remember, if it gets too much, we'll laugh and
all the years he said to laugh it off. Brother Freddy said to laugh it off. Cousin Batman said to laugh it off.
My uncles come around, they had some fun, yeah, by pushing me around. They laugh at my shirt, tell me I'm just dirt. I didn't know my shirt was gonna be big as my father's shirt, so I would walk away when they say go away. I turn and say, someday you both gonna be repaid. I damnly lived in hell with all the damn spells, mental as hell, but not a soul could ever tell. Oh well, I recall one day my granddad flew away, disappeared through the clouds. He always made me proud. In Brisbane he would live for 2 weeks on business, probably a dumb princess got something on his chest. I went back to my life, everything was alright. Then one night my uncles come round and told me my granddad died. They jumped out of their car, they started hassling me in the street. I jumped back, I'm like, what's up, G? They hit me in the mouth, cause that's what they about. They took me in the car and drove real far and punched me up some more. They never come round now, because I'm bigger now. I know if I offer them out, they will back out. They ain't gonna treat them, see? Just how they greeted me. I'm gonna teach him a lesson, bless him, but they got no enemy.
Surrey Hills, I was hanging out with Buckman there, Brother Buckman.
Hey, which way, which way?
Yeah, right, we were talking about stressing out and shit like that and the best way to cope with it.
Yeah.
What do you reckon the best way to cope with it?
Oh, man, you know, I just always been taught just to laugh it off, man.
Yeah, that's what we were saying, man. We said exactly the same thing,
right? That's it for now. Laugh it off.
Yeah, you said to laugh it off. Brother Freddy said to laugh it off. Cousin Buckman said to laugh it off. So good. Cousin Buckman said to laugh it off. So get ready, we're gonna laugh it off.